The following program is a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you like it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock. Click on the Donate Now button in the upper right corner of our webpage.
Inevitably, all of us will ask God this one important question.
What do you want me to do? Why am I here? You're here on this planet for a reason. What do you want me to do? Why am I here? What do you want me to do? Why am I here?
Hello? Hello? Who is this?
This is God calling.
Then everything can seem so clear. AM 1260 The Rock presents God Calling. This locally produced program looks closer at stories of religious vocations from the priesthood to marriage, from parenting to the single life. And now here's your host, Paul Orlowski.
Thanks once again for tuning in. This is Paul Orlowski, and you're listening to God Calling. We're here every week at this time, so we hope you'll join us each and every week at this time for conversations about people, their vocations, and what God called them to do in their lives. Mark and Lauren Loboda are here right now, and they've adopted a whole bunch of kids and a lot of love there, that's for sure. We're involved initially in bringing some children from foreign countries,
Honduras. This is where our son is adopted from.
Okay, very good. And you've adopted others as well. Lauren, why don't you start us off? How was your interest piqued in adoption and finding loving homes for kids unwanted, unfortunately?
Sure. So in 2005, I was in Honduras as a volunteer with Sisters of Mercy, and I was there for 9 months, and I lived in the same complex as the orphanage, and there were 40 kids who had been orphaned due to HIV and AIDS. So most of them had parents who have passed away or too sick to take care of them, and they were all HIV positive. So the sisters set up the home for them in the late 90s, and I got to meet a little boy who at the time was 4. I did not have parents that anyone knew were around, or aunts or uncles or grandparents or cousins. Mm-hmm. Most of the kids had people visiting, and Latin America, Central America being a place where families really focused on, there's family coming all the time. He had no one. That's how I met him. And when I met Mark, told him about my time volunteering, the little boy I wanted to sponsor and eventually try to bring here to the United States for a better life. And Mark was all about it. Long story short, it took 5 years to adopt him. Mm-hmm. And so he was already 10 and a half by the time he came, but he came to live with us 10 years ago.
Mark, I want to talk about you guys calling to this type of work, but I have to get back to that first date because that's a great story. You guys went out for lunch, I suppose, and she told you that she had another love in her life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So we went out to a fancy dinner at Denny's. We split a plate, and one of the first things she told me is that she knew of a little boy in the orphanage, and his name was Hovell. And she said, well, I'm going to try to bring him here to the U.S. And I said, all right, I'm in. And it felt very peaceful. It was a very exciting moment also at the same time. And 3 weeks later, with the use of a twisty tie and a loaf of bread, we got engaged. 9 months later, we got married.
Wow.
Our honeymoon was spent in Honduras. That's the first time I met him.
What goes through your head when you find this single woman who has this love, I suppose is the word?
Oh, strength. 100% strength, faith. Everything I could possibly want in a woman. First date I knew.
Yeah, you were fast.
Instinctively, I called my mom right afterwards and told her I found her.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
That's phenomenal. I was 14 months, but you guys ran laps around me.
When you know, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Well, let's talk about your background. Mm-hmm. Lauren, where'd you grow up? How'd you grow up? And did you go to Catholic schools?
Sure. So I was actually born not too far from here in Northfield. And yeah, my family and my sisters and I went to St. Barnabas. And mm-hmm. then we moved with my dad's job. We moved to Arizona and went to Catholic school there in Scottsdale. And then we moved to Georgia, a suburb outside of Atlanta, went to Catholic school there. And then we moved back to Northeast Ohio. We moved to Hudson, and I went to public school there. So I graduated Hudson High School in 2001.
What parish?
St. Mary's.
Okay.
And loved it. Life Teams really what brought me to my faith. and really a reversion back in young adulthood. Mark and I actually met on a young adult retreat through Life Teen. And now we belong to St. Mary's and we live in Hudson and our kids are going to Hudson City Schools. We're very happy.
Mm-hmm. Mark, what about you?
I grew up in Garfield Heights. I went to St. Peter and Paul and Trinity High School afterwards. And right now my vocation is I'm a police officer and spending my time raising the kids and having a good time.
Was there a spark in your life that told you it was important to continue your religious journey through life to marriage?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there was no doubt about it that was my path. And in order to pave that path with the faith, the marriage and having kids, and that was the way for me to go.
Lauren, you, same thing. I mean, you obviously had a very holy upbringing with respect for the sacraments and church and such. Never a call to, I know you were with the Sisters of Mercy when you went down to the mission.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever think about the religious life?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I had my nun run in high school. And, I really did. I really wanted to do the service and I really did want to do missionary work. I was actually supposed to be down there 2 years and I just found it not being for me. Glad I had the experience. I could do a whole show on what I learned living, you know, a third world country. But I honestly, it sounds funny, but I kept having dreams about being married and I was like, who am I going to marry? And like I said, I came home and that's when I met Mark on the young adult retreat. And it was actually my sister and her now husband, they were dating at the time, who put the retreat on, that introduced us. Yeah, I mean, I guess I thought of religious life, but I knew soon after just a couple teenage moments like of being a nun, but it didn't last. So
yeah.
I knew in my whole young adulthood that I would get married and
but I suppose
be a
mom. That, you know, if you don't explore that, maybe you would always have a question or something, as opposed to you explored it and now you've discerned.
Right. As much as I knew about it or what I thought I knew about it, I liked, but now I realize that's not where God wanted me.
So you got married. What happens next as far as adoptions and things like that, Mark?
Well, the adoption took a long time. Honduras had a coup and ousted their president. And
oh, boy.
All of our paperwork got thrown out the window. We basically had to redo everything.
Mm-hmm.
So once everything finally went through, they called us. Next day, we're on a plane. I was there for 5 weeks with them. And we came home, started our life.
You're coming back to America? We'll pick it up right there when we come back after these messages on God Calling on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. Welcome back to God Calling. This is Paul Orlowski. Mark and Lauren Loboda are our guests this week. And Mark, we left you at getting married and your first adopted child, bringing him, Jovan, to America.
Yeah, so when that adoption finally went through, we already had two children. Our first daughter, her name's Faustina, and our son's name Augustine. And the adoption goes through, so now we have Hovel, and we ended up getting pregnant with twins almost right away. So we had twin girls, Rose and Lily. So basically, at one point in time, we had four children in 18 months.
Wow.
Three kids in diapers. It was a very busy household. We had a lot of help.
As a mom, that's probably four hands full, if not more. So things, I take it, settle out at some point in time.
Sure.
What happens next?
Well, a few years later, we had another son, Frankie.
Right.
And then a couple years later, a daughter, Clara. And we, a couple years later, have a baby. Our baby now is 8 months old, Patrick.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Your adopted son.
Right.
Where is he now? What's he doing? And how did the whole experience interface with the children?
Sure. So we call him Mario. His nickname in the orphanage was Hovel. His legal name was always Mario. So when we did, you know, the passport and social security number and all that, he wanted to keep it officially Mario. So just so it's no confusion as I continue the story. So Mario came to live with us, kept him home for a year to homeschool him, teach him English. Never learned any English at almost 11 years old and figured that out quickly. Got involved in church, was an altar server, ended up doing Life Teen in high school, went to Hudson High School, and then right around his 14th birthday, he had some serious mental health issues. We started looking into treatment centers for him. Then again, closer to when he turned 15, had just some more really serious problems that we couldn't handle. And so, yeah, we really looked for a good home for him. Unfortunately, even foster care wasn't a safe enough option, wasn't enough security for him. So he ended up living in a few different group homes throughout the years. And when he turned 18, the people in his care felt he was able to go live on his own. And so now he's in an apartment and working. He's 20 years old. I can't believe it. Mark just talked to him the other day on the phone, and he's managing his mental health with medicine and psychiatrist. And he learned how to cook and clean and go to work, and actually has two jobs. So Mark's really happy with that, because Mark really focused on teaching him how to be a hard worker and work ethic. So we're grateful that he was able to get that skill. But he seems pretty happy. But you know, it's hard with mental health. It's kind of comes and goes. Sometimes we don't hear from him for a few months, and sometimes he calls.
But my imagination runs wild to what if he wasn't here to get those services? What might have happened to him? Would he be around? You know, Mark, what do you think about that? I mean, parenting's never easy. We all know that. But he might have been totally kicked to the curbside had he been still there.
Yeah, maybe. But we just take our time and we thank God that we were able to be there for him and provide him with the services that he needed. I'm trying to look on the optimist side of it.
Mm-hmm. Understandable. But like I say, parenting is never easy.
Mm-hmm.
Does he react, and how do the other children react to him?
Mm-hmm.
He'd be number three. Well, he's the oldest, right? But number three kind of in the pecking order of the family.
Exactly. Right. So our oldest, Faustina, she was three when he came. So she, of course, remembered him coming and meeting him at the airport and lived with him up until she was eight. So she's the one who remembers the most. Some did never live with him, and others were babies. So they remember visiting him, because we would go to the group homes and see him for holidays and on Sundays here and there. And like I said, with mental health and whether he decides to take his medicine or is just maybe going through something, so we'll go periods without hearing from him. So that can be hard on them, because like, why don't we talk to him, or why isn't he calling? But when he does want to talk or send pictures, it's nice for them. I guess it is what it is. We can't control it. But the good that's come out of it is we do think we've given him services that you don't really have in third world countries. And also taught our kids about something that they might have to encounter in life.
Sure.
And how to be merciful and kind. And they understand that he has a sickness that you can't see. And it's kind of cute. The other day, my daughter had a friend over, and she saw a picture of Mario, and the friend said, "Who's that?" She said, "Well, that's my brother." And, "Well, what? Where is he? Why isn't he here?" And she said, "Well, he's a little sick in his brain, but he's fine." And sometimes that happens when you're an orphan. You just don't know what happened when you were a baby or when you grew up. And sometimes that happens to orphans. And then she kind of went off on a little explanation of orphanages.
No kidding.
And she's only eight.
Wow. Talk about life lessons.
Huh? Mm-hmm.
The seeds that you guys planted, grew under your tutelage for a while. But now there are other organizations that have picked up the ball. And Mark, you want to tell us about some of that and what your experiences have been with that?
Oh, sure thing. So since we had the experience with the adoption, I believe one day Lauren received a phone call from a priest in Rwanda. His name is Father John Bosco, and said that he had some orphans that were victims of the genocide in Rwanda. And he said that he wants to send them here to Ohio to go to high school. And so Lauren said yes. I honestly have to say, I didn't really believe this was going to work out.
Mm-hmm.
But a few months later, we're at the Cleveland airport welcoming three Rwandans. With our family growing the way it was, Lauren went ahead and found a bunch of
sponsors,
really.
Yeah, there you go.
Found them new families. They've all graduated high school here, and some of them went off to college. One is getting his doctorate, and he's going to go back to Rwanda and head up a university.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a break on that note. We'll be right back. I'm God Calling. Stay right where you are. Mark and Laura Labota joining us on God Calling. I'm Paul Orlowski. We hope you'll be here each and every week at this time. In these days, Mark, you got a tough job as a police officer. How does your faith work into that? Because as a news reporter, I saw a lot of stuff, and probably 5% of what you see each and every day. In the world today, people don't respect the job as it should be respected. I always often wonder, I've talked to some police officers about this, it's just that you got to have faith or something.
Oh, absolutely. First things first, let's put it this way. When I'm in my car and I have a police officer following behind me, I still get nervous. I get it. So the faith is intertwined in the job. And it is a vocation.
There's no doubt about that.
It is a calling. And the ones who get into it and it wasn't their calling, they end up getting out of it for a different reason.
Mm-hmm.
So mercy, right? Most of my job, 90% of my job is I'm a traffic guy. Pull someone over for speeding, whatever. Mm-hmm. Isn't it a great feeling to get let go with a warning?
Yeah.
I get that. I've gotten those before. I've got pulled over before. I'm not proud of it. The warnings are great. I mean, it's all about it. And it always helps when you have a rosary hanging from your middle mirror.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah, it's a calling. And the name of our program, obviously, is God Calling. You say it was a call. So you knew from an early age that that's what you wanted to do?
It wasn't really from an early age. I had a great neighbor. His name was Tim Reed, and he's a retired police officer now. So I always had him to look up to. It wasn't until I was a little later in life, I was about 26 years old, and I started talking to Lauren about it, and we started praying about it. None of our major decisions are ever made by just talking. We always prayed about everything.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I came home from work, and she said, "Hey, I called the police academy, and I signed you up."
Wow.
And within 3 months, I was in the academy, and... A couple of years later, I got my first job and off we went.
Yeah, the rest is history. Tough being the wife of a police officer these days as well.
Yes. I don't know what to say about that, but...
Well, there's worries.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would certainly guess, and prayer mm-hmm. probably helps you through that.
Of course. Like Mark said, knowing it's a calling, you know, so it just brings peace and... Like anything in life, it's what you focus on. So I just focus on the good he does and the people that support him. If anything, we see how supportive people really are because those people come through too, especially in these hard times, people that want to show their support.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great.
I was interested in something you said earlier about being down in Honduras in the Mercy Corps and that. You talked about those of us maybe up here not understanding. What is it like in Honduras? I've never been there.
Well, like any place, there's a diverse... You know, group of people, diverse circumstances, but where I was, it was urban center, mm-hmm. very, very poor. Lots of crime, gangs. We heard about murders. We heard gunshots. Every day where I walked to work, I worked outside of the orphanage. I walked past where everyone dumped their trash. They don't have trash pickup, and there are families that live there. So seeing kids going through that every day.
Going through the garbage?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dear.
Mm-hmm. The orphanage was really blessed by really a lot of U.S. donors and the connections that the sisters had throughout the world. So they did well, but it was very simple life. I mean, 40 kids in a building, eating rice and beans, got the medicine they needed and whatnot, but still very simple life.
Mm-hmm.
Washed clothes by hand. But at the same time, there was fun and, you know, people had TVs and dance parties and... There were still malls and movie theaters, so uh-huh. It was kind of interesting just what was there and what wasn't. But
sounds like you were ministering in an area that needed some outreach.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How would you advise someone, both of you, how would you advise someone who might be interested in reaching out to someone in a foreign land that mm-hmm. has maybe little hope, but you can give them more hope? Lauren, why don't you start?
Sure. So the sisters are who I was with, and I think if you can find an order that you know and trust, so that it's good to know they've been there, they're involved in the community, they know what the community needs. Also, that they're reputable and you know your money's going to be used well and people are there on the ground. That was a reason why we stopped doing the works, because we just were having more children mm-hmm. and we'd already had brought Mario here, so traveling there was just too hard and we felt very disconnected and unable to see through the funds. So it was hard to keep taking donations and going abroad. And then when we went, well, we didn't go, but when our organization went to Rwanda, again, we just weren't able to travel to Africa. And it's just not realistic right now as much as we'd like to. So a group of very successful business people and other professionals in our parish started their own nonprofit, and it's called Friends of Rwandan Education. They call it FREE. They were asked by Father Don Bosco to start a school. So they started St. Anthony's High School, and they've raised over $1 million the past few years. And they have their website and their charity, and they do travel there. And so I think if you can find someone you trust in your parish or in the diocese or an order that you know is going to take the money that you donate and do good with it, that would be mm-hmm. my advice.
And Mark, having feet on the ground, it's almost like having advanced intel as a police officer or something. I mean, they're there, they're reputable, and there are certainly organizations out there that are not reputable these days, but coming through a religious order, yeah, I think you probably have more confidence.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the first time I've met these nuns, they're the most beautiful people I've ever seen, very selfless, very giving. It was nonstop. It was amazing to see, watching this missionary work. You know, I knew it was hard. I knew that, you know, I was going to sweat, but I didn't know I was going to sweat from the time that I woke up to the time I went to bed. It was a pretty amazing experience.
I think in large measure, many Americans, me included, have not experienced enough of other cultures. Yeah, we read about it in a book or take a history class or whatever you do, but you got to be there. We were talking to a priest at a recent show, and he's an artist, and he read about the Sistine Chapel and books, and this, but then he went there, and he's a whole different thing. So anyway, hopefully these tips are happy. Thanks for sharing your vocation journey of marriage and this beautiful adoption, and we pray for you and hope all goes well.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming in. This is God Calling. I'm Paul Orlowski. We'll be here each and every week at this time. We hope you'll be with us each and every week at this time on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio.
What do you want me to do? Why am I here? You're here on this planet for a reason. What do you want me to do? Why am I here?
Hello? Hello? Who is this?
This is God Calling.
Thank you for listening to God Calling here on AM 1260 The Rock. This locally produced program is dedicated to looking closer at religious vocations, from the priesthood to marriage, from parenting to the single life. If you miss any part of today's program or you just want to listen again, go to our website, am1260therock.com, and click on the On Demand tab.
The preceding program was a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you liked it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock. Click on the Donate Now button in the upper right corner of the webpage.